work to undo those. And the only way that I can work to undo those is to start to see the ways in which I participate in those things. Same thing with racial bias, same thing with my own internalized ways of homophobia and femphobia and the ways in which masculinity has been prioritized in particular kinds of ways in my life and in my experience. And to me, this is what it means to engage in wise conduct or right conduct. And what it means to really practice with these precepts, to really not let them turn into some concrete idea about how to, you know, that's just sort of trapped in this black and white idea, but to really start to pick apart what it means to be closer to our deepest intentions. Because I think whether you've taken precepts or not, or living by vows or not, you know, yes, I numerous times and every month I renew them, and you know, I publicly affirmed my commitment to certain precepts. But really, I'm really just trying to, all of that is just another way for me to try to get closer to this ideal of being who I want to be in the world, of living out my own enlightened experience. The great thing about Zen is you know, we believe that you're already enlightened, that you already have everything you need, that you already possess full wisdom. And that part of the process of practice is to let that be expressed, to start to get close to expressing that in our day-to-day lives, so that enlightenment becomes an appropriate response. So I want to talk, I want to read something from a friend of mine's book. Rod Owens wrote a really great book called Love and Rage. And I've been through it like four or five times, and I keep going through it and mining it for really great things. And lately, this is what's been speaking to me. When I say that everything should be loved, what I'm also saying is that everything has a place. If it's outside of our experience, then it begins to become really dangerous for us. It becomes subconscious. And then that becomes a demon or a monster. People come up to us and say, "Don't you see that demon that's following you around?" Sorry, I have a siren going off. People come up to us and say, "Don't you see that demon that's following you around?" I'll just put it in another language. "Don't you know that you're super misogynistic? Don't you get that you're racist?" And you're like, "What? What are you talking about?" That's the shadow. We've learned how to pack everything away because we're really invested in being good people. You can say, "I'm a good person. I'm not a misogynist. I'm not transphobic. I'm a good person." Sometimes being a good person or my attachment to being a good person actually gets in the way of me looking at all the rough spots, at all the shadows that I'm working with. I don't even go there anymore. I don't care about being good. I care about actually being in relationship to the shadow, to the hurt, to the woundedness, to the rage, and to the ways in which I'm really addicted and attached to power. You know, and just like what Stafford was trying to get at in the poem about you know, the certain twisted monsters always bar the path, but that's when you get going best. Learning how real it is here on earth again and again. And I'll say again, I never learned from the things that I've done well. All of the growth that I've had in my life, all of those transformative moments that make me person that is sitting here trying to form ideas in front of you, you know, I came to Buddhist practice because I was suffering. And my suffering was overwhelming and it was causing me to really be unhappy, but also to really act out in unhealthy ways. And I needed to find a better way to hold it. And I found that in practice. But I got here because of suffering. I didn't get, and I don't know anybody who sort of like just thinks like, okay, I'm gonna go do this thing because everything's hunky-dory. Because sometimes being a Buddhist is a lot of hard work. Sometimes it's really painful. You know, I'm reminded of one of the early meditation retreats I did at Zen Center. I would sit on the cushion, and as soon as the bell would ring, I would start to bawl. And I don't mean like the nice, pretty tears, you know, coming down my, rolling down my cheek and a nice, no, this was like snot coming out your nose and heat, you know, heaving breaths and full body convulsion, crying. And it happened for 7 days. And during these retreats, you meditate 8 or 9 times a day. And it was just like, and I would just be so like, and as soon as the bell would ring, it would all just sort of clear up. And I couldn't figure it out. And I go to the person who eventually became my teacher, and I was like, you know, I don't understand this. And all he said was, is maybe you don't need to understand it. Maybe you're just, your body's working through something and you can just experience your body having an experience. Let the suffering happen. And let that help to bring about some ease for you. And I don't know whether or not it did. I kept sitting. I even did another 7-day retreat shortly thereafter. But you know, the point of it is really this idea of like it's really vital that we try to let go of our ideas about and our stories about what it means to be us in the world, so that we can start to see the places where we might be tripping, the places where we might be the subtle places of our precepts, the subtle places of our deepest intentions, the subtleties of what it means to not kill, to not steal, to not misuse sexuality, to not lie. I was on the phone with a friend of mine this morning and we were talking about some difficulty that she was having, and she stopped herself in the middle of our conversation. I was listening to her talk about what was happening for her, and she just said, oh my God, I just spent all this time, like I need to back up because I just lied. And I was fascinated by the power of the feeling that I got after that, which was I felt so incredibly close to her and so incredibly grateful to her. And then I also thought about whether or not I could have enough faith in my relationships to do the same thing. Because, you know, I lie to myself all the time. And then I spread that lie to other people. And my friend just sort of caught herself doing that and then stopped and said, let's back up. I want to tell the truth here. And what happened out of that was this incredible moment of intimacy, this incredible feeling of just love that I had for my friend. And appreciation for what a skillful response to the world. It was a beautiful moment of enlightenment. For her, for me. And it only comes when we start to think about and try to get in touch with the subtleties. And that's why meditation and practices, these practices are so important, is because it allows us to quiet down enough that we can hear those subtle sounds that will tell us where it is, and we can slide our way past our trouble. Okay, I want to leave some time for people to talk and to ask questions. So I'll stop there and say thank you very much. And I think you can just unmute yourself if you want to ask a question or have a comment or want to tell me I'm crazy or, oh my God, you gave that same talk on Tuesday.
Daigon, thank you. I'm Ryan. Hi, Ryan. I enjoyed the spot where you started talking about how difficult things are. That's feels very real for me. And I just feel like sometimes there's that kind of, I don't know if it's the boredom demon or just this kind of thing that just makes you just, you don't want to sit, but you want to sit, but you're restless. And it's just, it can really gnaw at me, you know? And so I get that, and I agree with you that when we sit, that it does get better. Yeah, but it sometimes is very difficult. I feel like and Yoda said, it takes the deepest commitment to Luke in Star Wars. I mean, it's true, right? It's not about looking at the horizon, right? So thank you.
Well, and I think that resistance is a really beautiful thing. When we don't make it a problem, we just, like everything else, we just label it and, oh, look, I'm resistant. Huh, what's that about? Can I get curious and start to ask myself about that and not make it the problem, but let it be the fuel for the inquiry? Suzuki Roshi once said, if you want to train a horse, you give it a big pasture. So when I meet resistance in my own practice, and 30 years later, I have those days when it's just like, yeah, no, screw all this shit. Like, and I just have to sort of, oh, I'm resistant. Okay. Let me just be resistant. Let me give it some space. Let it tell me what it needs to tell me. Which may be about boredom, but it also might be about, I'm tired of my own story. There's lots of reasons why I get resistant. And sometimes it's because I'm close to getting in touch with something that might be important. So I love resistance. I think resistance is common. And like all things, I think the important piece is to not make it a problem. And just to, I have to say this shelter in place and stuff, it's doing weird stuff to my life and to my thoughts and to my mind. And I think it's true for a lot more than just me, because I'm hardly unique in the world. Loki.
What was the name of that poem that you spoke at the beginning? It's
Cutting Loose by William Stafford. I'll copy and paste the text into the chat.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for the talk. Okay, Cutting Loose, William Stafford.
Did you have another question or?
Just that. Oh, I had a comment of when we're wondering about the precepts or an insight and the different aspects or nuances of say not to kill, which I also interpret as to preserve life, and what that could all mean, or any of the others, that the point of when something causes suffering is how I understand it. So if I'm telling myself a white lie and then realize it, now how much suffering did that cause? How much more will it cause others? But I was thinking of this also of, I was with a close friend who had to have his cat. She was in her dying stages. She was 18. And it was very, very painful for both of us because we love this. But it was the right thing to do. And I've heard other teachers say, no, be with them. Be with beings who are suffering. But I thought, well, what good does that do? What if the best right action is to relieve the suffering, to do for them what they can't do, or for myself? And it really made me think about that precept, that loving and caring for this person or this being was to let them go, have them be out of suffering, because the cat was, she was in her end stages. So anyways, just, I mean, I don't kill ants. I avoid it, but I will put pesticide and kill fleas on cats, you know, stuff like that. Those are my models.
Well, I think that, you know, like I said, there's no hard and fast rules. And, you know, I think a lot of my friends during the AIDS crisis chose when they wanted to end their life. And I would be with them in those moments. And, you know, I think that it's easy for us on this side of equations to say what is right or wrong in those moments when we're not in those moments. And I think that it's really vital for us to that practice really happens in each moment. So I can't say like, oh, this would be killing. I can only say, you know, this is my experience in the moment. And sometimes the moments involved people choosing when they wanted to end their life. And that's okay. And it was beautiful and important. And, you know, I don't know that that qualifies as killing.
I've had that experience also with those with AIDS and other terminal conditions. It's very powerful.
Well, we've got to close, everyone, at 6:30. So Daigon, thank you very much for the talk. Let's sit for a minute together and we'll do some metta. May our practice here together and our listening to the Dharma, may it be for the benefit of each and every one of us, and may that benefit spread to all beings everywhere. May all beings be safe and free from danger and harm. May all beings be happy and have the causes of happiness in their lives. May all beings everywhere be healthy in body and in mind. And may all of us and all beings in these difficult times live with ease and well-being and ultimately be free. Daigon, thank you again for the very good talk and lots of food for thought. Really appreciate it. We're a self-organized, self-supporting little sangha, as you all know, and it's only through the generosity of everyone that has kept us going. We're now in our 19th year. We just celebrated our 18th birthday last month. And so it's through generosity that keeps us going. And when we're at the Buddhist Center, there are two baskets, two donation baskets, dana baskets for the teacher, and one for the teacher and one for the sangha. In the chat just now, the place where you can donate to Daigon, he's got a Venmo account and a PayPal account, and that's in the little chat box. And then also our account for the sangha is in that same chat box. So there's a link for both. So please be as generous as you can during these tough times financially for a lot of people. We're continuing to pay our rent at the Buddhist Center where we normally meet, even though we're not obviously attending, just to support them. So as long as the donations keep coming in to the Sangha, we can pass that on to the center and to the teachers too, who come like all the teachers have come for 2,600 years of passing on the teachings just through the love of them and the commitment to them without any promise of compensation. But in the real world, we need to live, and so we give. And it's something that will feel good to on both ends of that giving. So there's a queer Dharma week-long retreat that Arena Weissman is going to be leading that normally would be at Joshua Tree at Dhammadina Meditation Center, but it's going to be remote. It's going to be in October. And if you're interested in that, you can either go to Dhammadina's website or Arena Weissman's website, and you can see a link. And there's probably a link even on our own website of that event by now. Does anybody else have any other announcements?
I'm teaching on October the 3rd and the 24th. It's a 2-day, hour and a half sessions over, an hour and a half on each day on the October 3rd and the 24th at East Bay Meditation Center with my friend Carol Kano, and we're teaching practicing with sexual energy. And then I'm teaching for the Insight Meditation Center in Los Angeles with Rod Owens, and I think it's on the October 15th. I can't remember the exact dates. If you go to my website, queerdharma.net, you can see the dates for the, and that's Undoing Patriarchy with me and Rod Owens, and that's for male and masculine identified people.
Okay.
And non-binary and trans people. So those are two great events coming up.
Okay, so that's queerdharma.net is the website, and you can get that information. Great. Thank you, Daigon. Anyone else have anything? Well, it's great to